Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and we are back. A little bit of a break, just some news here with the Clubhouse podcast. We're now with iHeartRadio, our friends at iHeart. If you haven't been paying attention to what we're doing, I started a different podcast, a separate podcast than the one you're listening to right now, called Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. Basically, it's this name, but we added a PGA Tour player and a PGA Tour winner. That's about it. But it's been great. Not only has the podcast been doing well, we've recorded four episodes already. It's going to come out once a week early in the week. Max and I talk about golf and everything that comes with it and everything outside of it, and we go on tangents and rants. We have a lot of fun, and it's done really well. But the kind and great people at iHeartRadio decided to take a chance on that podcast, and we have now moved the Clubhouse over to iHeartRadio. Hopefully it didn't mess up your feed. I'm assuming if you're listening to this, it just rolled into your phone and you're at the gym or you're driving or you're running or you're working or you're golfing or you're hitting range balls and you're listening to this and it was seamless and easy for you. But our first one back, this one right here, is a great one because we had an MVP of the National Football League, Matt Ryan, on. We chatted for 45, 50 minutes about golf, about football, about his experience, how he got into it, how he got better. And we finished up with the always important question of who would win in an 18-hole televised event, Matt Ryan or Steph Curry. And you'll have to wait till the end to hear who Matt picked, himself or another MVP who also has a very polished game in Steph Curry. But it was a lot of fun. Big thanks to Matt for jumping on, obviously. A very famous and very busy guy. And he spent 50 minutes on the phone with me. And I said this at the end of the podcast, but I just want to give a little bit of kudos to this guy. This is who Matt Ryan is. If you're on the fence about Matt Ryan, should I love the guy? Is he one of my favorite players? Do I have him on my fantasy team? Matt Ryan, with all the accolades and all the fame, went to an office to record this podcast on a landline. And that, my friends, is next level thinking. So thank you, Matt, for doing that. I hope you guys enjoy it. If you like this podcast, just do me a favor. Go rate and review it on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts. It helps the podcast. And since we are starting out with iHeart, we want to look great for them. We want to really impress them. So if you could go do that, I would appreciate it. Hope you guys are having a great week and hope you enjoy the quote-unquote new Clubhouse. It's basically the same thing. It just is a different company that's running it. That's it. But I'm still going to be the same. You're listening to the same. And I hope you enjoy it. Let's get to our NFL MVP. And we welcome into the Clubhouse for the first time, 2016 NFL MVP Matt Ryan, who also a little bit of a golfer, Matt. Your handicap is what right now?
Oh man, I think my index, it got screwed up when the change happened at the beginning of the year. I think I'm like a 1.2 index right now. It went down a little bit,
yeah.
Which was disappointing with the change.
I've had a little bit of an issue with that as well. I've noticed that if you're a lower handicap, so if you're closer to scratch, you're not getting as many pops. And if you're a higher handicap, like one of my friends is a 7 or an 8, we played the other day, played with Max Homa the other day. And my friend's getting 11. I'm like, you're not getting 11 is ridiculous, man. You're going to kill us. And of course he did kill us. So that's how that works.
I'm sure it did. And how many was Max giving him?
So Max plays as a +5. And so, you know, I mean, he's basically, we're playing off of Max as a 0. So an 11 is now getting 16. And again,
oh
this
God.
Guy's hitting it like a 6 or a 5. And I mean, if I'm making par, I'm just getting smoked. So that was how it was going. But you just, before we got going, you said you've been on a tear playing golf lately. I told you, hold on to that before we hit record. So let's hear it. I need to hear about your off-season golf adventures, because I know you like to hit up a lot of the places when you can.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I try and play as much as I can. I thought having twin boys that were 2 was going to kind of throw a wrench in that, but honestly, it hasn't. I've still been playing a bunch of golf. You know that with the newborn, and you know, you think it's going to take away from a lot of the golf, but I've actually, you know, continued to play quite a bit. And my wife was joking with me probably like 3 or 4 days ago that, you know, since the season ended, I think I've only missed like 4 days of golf. So it's a pretty good stretch for about 30 some days.
Are you playing 2 or 3 times a week, more or less? I mean, I know I'm going to call you a golf nut. I mean, you're a guy that loves to play and loves to get out when he can. Are we talking, you know, daily at this point?
Yeah, at this point, you know, it's kind of funny because like right when the season ends, you know, you've got the itch to get out and play because you haven't played, you know, you haven't really played hardly at all for 6 months. And so you've got this itch to get out and you just want to get back into it. And you're practicing a bunch, trying to find your game. And it coincides with having nothing to do. So it works well. You know, I've got a bunch of free time. You know, I'm not really into throwing yet. And, you know, so you got a lot of time to work on it. So I would say, you know, probably for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the off season, I play, you know, 5 days a week, something like that, which is pretty good. And then I'm probably hitting balls the other 2 days too.
Well, so you said something that I totally agree with. And we had a conversation. So Matt and I had a chance to play golf this past year. Your coach does something really cool. And you were praising him about this. When you guys are on the road on back-to-back games, and I believe it's when you're kind of traveling west, you guys will stay on the road for those 2 weeks, which means you get a couple of days or a full day of doing whatever you want. And for you, that means you're going to go play golf. So you bring your clubs. I think you shipped your clubs out. We got a chance to play some golf. We played with Matt Schaub and Max Homa here in Phoenix as you guys were getting ready to play the Cardinals. And you were talking about how you had twin boys and you feel like you're still able to go play golf. What I've learned, you know, my son's 8 months old now. What I've learned personally is I thought the golf was going to go away and it hasn't. And it's because what you do is you just cut out the time that you're wasting before having kids of stuff that you don't really need to do. If it's going to a sports bar to watch football or whatever, you just cut that out. But golf's still there. You can still go spend 4.5 hours on a golf course. It's just after that, you better be home. Is that what you've kind of, that's what you've encountered?
Absolutely. You and I, you know, talked about that when we were together, and you have to prioritize what's important to you. And, you know, of the whole golfing experience, you know, the beers and drinks afterwards, you know, it was fun. Don't get me wrong. But the priority was playing and practicing and trying to get my game as good as I can get it. And so, you know, we talked about it too. Now it's more like you roll in, maybe you get 5 minutes to warm up, something quick like that. And then you're on the course. And then as soon as it's over, you know, you're settling up with whatever bet you had and you're hitting the road and getting back home as fast as possible.
Yeah, there's not a, that's exactly right. There's not an hour and a half of sitting around. That is kind of gone. That I'm sure will come back at some point when they get old enough to be in school or whatever. But right now it's, I'm going to play. And if I'm done playing, then I got to go back and help out. I did want to bring out something serious to you because there are some serious football news going on. If this new CBA is approved, I was reading today, this could impact the Pebble Beach Pro-Am if you make it deep into the playoffs, possibly into the Super Bowl. Is that going to sway your decision on this CBA, this extended scheduling? Because that's one of your favorite weeks of the year.
There's no question. I love that week. You know, you hope at the beginning of the year, you're not playing in it every year. You hope you're playing in a Super Bowl and you're celebrating, you know, the following week. But I guess the only thing that gets you through it when you're not in the Super Bowl is knowing that you have that carrot of playing in the Pro-Am. And so, that definitely, you know, I got to take that into consideration. You probably are better or more up to speed on the CBA than I am at this point. I'm kind of waiting to hear from our guys on what we're going to do.
Yeah, I read a little bit about it. I was trying to prep, you know, I'm trying to make sure that I was at least level with you. But how many times have you played at Pebble Beach? I know you played this year. Would you play with Russell Knox this year?
Yep, I played. So this was the second year that I've played in it, and I felt bad. You know, I had been invited a couple times prior and I said no to them. You know, the 1 year I said no, we were in the Super Bowl. So, you know, obviously I couldn't do it. The following year, my boys were born in February. And so I had to say no to that too. And I was like, listen, I can't say no to them a third time. And so, you know, I've been lucky enough to do it the past couple of years and played with Russell Knox both times. who's awesome, and really enjoyed getting to know him and his caddy, David Clark. They're just fun guys to be around. And the week is just so cool because you get to see people that you haven't seen in a while. I ran into Max again, who we played with in Scottsdale during the fall, and got to see how good he's playing right now, which is awesome to see, and so happy for him that he's out there tearing it up.
Yeah, he was telling me he had to borrow some hand warmers from you. I feel like that was that's something a quarterback always has to have on him.
I was shocked he was so unprepared. I was like, dude, I'm like out here as the hack with hand warmers. I'm never going to let my hands get cold. That's for sure.
That's the one thing you know.
Tossed him some hand warmers before the round.
So I was reading, you did an interview with Dan McDonald a few years ago. I think it was 2017. And you were talking about how you got into golf and then how you switched on the idea of getting better and more competitive. And it was Chris Redman. He was a backup quarterback for you in Atlanta early in your career. And basically Chris would go out and he would kind of whoop your ass on the golf course. And that was how it went. And you said that was basically the moment you decided, I got to get a little bit better at this. When you look back, what was your game like when you were getting into it at that time in your career versus your game now? Because, I mean, I played with you. You hit it forever, and you hit it so high. You launch it like JT. I mean, it's got to be – I'm sure you're a TrackMan guy at some point. The launch has got to be 11 or 12 or something like that.
Yeah, the launch is – high and far is not my problem. You know, like hitting it straight is my problem. I remember, you know, our owner, Arthur Blank, is good friends with Butch Harmon. And so, you know, maybe like after my third or fourth year in the league, he connected me with Butch, and I went out and saw Butch for a couple of days in Las Vegas. And he was like, his line to me was like, Matt, far is not your problem. Find is your problem. He's like, finding your ball is the most important thing. Like, if we can figure that out, we're going to be fine. But I got into it. You're right. Cause I was Chris Redman's ATM, for about 3 years. He would whoop my ass on the golf course, take my money. And I was like, screw this, man. I gotta figure out a way to get better. And started taking lessons, you know, from a guy, Mike Lipnick at TPC Sugarloaf, here in Duluth, Georgia, just outside of Atlanta. And I got better so much faster. And that's what I tell guys all the time. It's like, dude, go find somebody to see that knows what they're doing that's going to help you improve. Because it's so much more fun when you start playing well than when you're just spraying it all over the place. And my game at that point was just, you know, I thought it was cool to try and see how far you could hit it. And now I'm more like, all right, let's hit it a little bit shorter. Let's keep it in play. Let's find ways to score better. And I'm kind of obsessed with it now.
Yeah. What's the nerve level playing at Pebble Beach? I mean, again, you're a guy that can hit it. I mean, you could hit it 300 yards. I'd say you touch one solidly, it's going to go 300 yards. When you're playing Pebble Beach 2 years, your nerve level the first year versus this past year, you know, you got fans there. I mean, there's people around. What was it like the first round you had to play kind of in that environment versus this year when you were a little bit more comfortable knowing kind of what comes with that?
Oh, it was night and day. You know, I think my first tee shot last year playing in it, we played Monterey Peninsula on Thursday. And, you know, the first tee shot is kind of a downhill par four. I think the members play it as a par five, but it's a downhill par four. And there's trees on the right. And I hit my first tee shot right of the right trees, which I mean is like 100 yards offline. And it's just, you know, I've never kind of been in that situation. I played in the Lake Tahoe event, the celebrity Tahoe event that they have during the summer. I played in that early in my career, but it had been probably 7 or 8 years since I had done it. And so it's a whole new set of nerves when you're playing in front of people. And once I got settled in, I was fine. But it's always that first tee shot that kind of gets you going, because you're not into the round. You're just excited. You're ready to go. And my tendency, you know, when I'm like that, is to get in front of the ball. And you know as well as anybody, when that, you know, when your lower body and your upper body's in front of the ball, you got no chance of hitting that thing solid. And you know, that's usually when I block it out a million miles right.
Well, you talked, you were on Callaway Live. You surprised our buddy Harry Arnett a couple of years ago, and you came out, and something I found very interesting that you'd mentioned was you said the golf swing and throwing a football have similarities because they both start from the ground up. I feel like that's kind of a new way of looking at the golf swing. I mean, you watch people like Justin Thomas or Lexi Thompson, and there's so much power being pushed up, you know, with their legs and their feet off the ground. And you're right. I mean, it does. That is a little bit about how, you know, the mechanics of throwing a football work. And so is that been, you know, that is that just something that you kind of can think about and make sense to you when you're standing over a golf ball, knowing that what you do for a living does have some similarities to what you're doing on the golf course?
Absolutely. You know, it's I tell people this all the time. You know, when we're throwing and we're working on throwing, you know, we talk all the time about ground force production. And so it's like no different than when you swing a golf club. If you're not synced from the ground up, you're not going to create as much power as you possibly can. And you're right. I mean, that's like, that's the buzz in golf right now is, you see more people lifting their front leg off the ground, which is kind of an old school move, but is coming back in to try and create as much power as you can. And that's what we're doing when we're throwing a football. You know, we're trying to, you know, we call it, you know, hip and shoulder disassociation. So our lower half is firing left and our upper body is kind of staying behind it when we're throwing, to create, you know, as much torque and as much twist as we can to create power. And really that's no different than what you're doing when you create lag in the golf swing. Your left side, is clearing and your right side up top is staying behind it and then like letting it whip through. And so I'm always fired up, to go work on, you know, throwing mechanics and to train those things, because the ancillary benefit is that I'm getting better at golf while I'm training for football. So it kind of works out perfect for me.
Now, I don't want this to come off as me trying to be funny, but is it fair to say that, you know, everybody watching you aside, would the DAC warm-up thing actually be good to do to start a golf round? I mean, the little DAC kind of twisting thing that went viral
this
year?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's funny you mention it. So DAC works out with a couple of the same guys, you know, biomechanics throwing coaches that I work out with. And so I was out working out with them last week, and I was literally, I used that same kind of movement in my warm up as well. And I was literally
saying
to them, I was like, I am going to be doing this right down the back of a driving range and people are going to be looking at me like I'm crazy. But it really is like the best way to open up, you know, those muscles to get you ready to swing. And, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. You should be trying that movement in the mirror at the house, trying to you know, to better move that way.
Yeah, this is going to be on Golf Channel in about 2 months. There's going to be some guy showing this new age, you know, rotating warm-up move. And I'm just going to just cut and paste the DAC move next to it. You know, you're a golfer. And again, we've already talked about how much you play. But where do you sit in terms of obsessed golfer? Are you the guy that's wearing the logo hats to film? I mean, are you buying the vest and the shirts and the jackets everywhere you go? Is that where you sit currently in terms of obsessed golfer?
So I'm not as much like the logo obsessed with having those things. I'm more of, so I've got good friends at Travis Matthew who have been great to me. This is like a shameless plug, but I'll throw it out there.
Hey, they're nice to me too. Plug away.
Yeah. So they've been awesome. And I'm friends with John Malinger, who was, you know, kind of one of the guys who started it, and they've since sold to Callaway. And so, they've been really nice to me. And so for my golf stuff, I kind of trend in that direction. I've got a few logo things from different places I've been, but I'm not obsessed with that. I guess, you know, maybe like a putter cover or like a cool head cover or something like that, from a unique place that I've been is kind of where I would trend in that direction.
Yeah. You know, I did the golf towel for a while. When I'd go to a cool golf course, I would always buy the towel because, you know, first you always have to have a towel in your bag. And second, I just thought it was something different. But I have cheapened as I've gotten older. I just get the pencil, man. I got the pencil frame on my wall in my office. You get the pencil, you put it on there. It costs you no money. The only issue is, internationally, the pencils aren't as popular. So some of those Scotland golf courses that are a little off the beaten path, and I was in New Zealand, played a couple of golf courses down there, they don't have the great pencils. So it's a little bit of a bummer. But the towel was kind of my initial go-to. It is funny when you when you see what people buy, and they tend to buy the same thing. They always get the hat. They always get the shirt. They always get the vest. You know, a lot of the people do the ball marker, but you know, those pro shops are big and they get better and better every year. And you know, we want to brag. We want to show off what we got at the airport, you know?
Absolutely. Brag. And then, you know, I like the idea of taking care of when you're a guest at some place, you know, and somebody's been nice enough to take you out or, you know, to have you to their spot. I always think it's good form to, you know, try and take care of the pros in there as well, you know,
and
support the cause in there. So, typically I'm like a gift person in those type of situations, whether it be, you know, grabbing something for my dad, grabbing something for, my brothers or for a friend's birthday who's coming up. That's kind of the direction I like to go.
So you mentioned your dad. I was talking about the interview you did in 2017 about golf. And you talked at that time, the experience you had at Muirfield in Scotland with your dad and doing the alternate shot. And really, you don't really see your playing partner most of the day because they've got it down to such a science. You said that was one of your favorite golf memories. Is that still up there? Have you added some that would join that list?
Well, that's one of my favorites. You know, I think the whole experience there, we went with one of our minority owners, John Emley. John was a minority owner of the Falcons for a long time, and he's since passed away. But John had a house in North Berwick. And so
nice.
It was right at the end of the golf course at North Berwick. He had this big, beautiful home. And John was kind enough to invite myself. And for a long time, it was Chris Redman, my backup quarterback, but he would invite two of us over every summer and have us stay at the house and we'd play. And John was a member at everywhere over there. And so I had been to Scotland a number of times, and played Muirfield with John and just loved the experience. But one summer John invited my dad to come with me. And that was the coolest part to be able to, share the experience of probably my favorite place to play in the world, is there. To share that experience of showing up, coat and tie, taking it off, going and playing alternate shot in the morning, coming in, having this 3-hour lunch, going back out and playing alternate shot in the afternoon. And just the vibe and the speed with which they play. And it's all about the match and all about, you know, the camaraderie at lunch. It was just, it was a day that I'll never forget. And for sure, you know, my favorite golf experience that I've had.
Did you play North Berwick when you were over there?
I've played North Berwick probably, I can't even tell you how many times I've played North Berwick. I've also played at 10 o'clock at night. You know, we would go over in July. We'd hop over the fence. John had a key through one of the fences at the end. And we would walk through the fence with the key and play the loop down there at the bottom. So it's like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and then roll back and play 8 again. Or 7, whichever one it is, and play 5 or 6 holes at 10 o'clock at night, you know, with 3 or 4 beers and, you know, 3 or 4 balls and 3 or 4 clubs. And it was just a perfect way to do it.
Yeah. I lived over there one summer when I caddied at St. Andrews. And I always tell people during the summer in Scotland, because I believe St. Andrews, Scotland is at the same latitude as Anchorage, Alaska. If that gives people in the States an idea, you know, of how north Scotland is. It never gets dark there. It gets midnight blue, but it's never, not one time, is it pitch black. So you talk about playing golf at 10. I mean, you can basically play till midnight, and you're just kind of going, what time is it? You lose track of all time. All you want to do is play golf. You can play 4 rounds in one day if you want to. It is a pretty interesting time to be over across the pond, because if you're trying to squeeze in some golf in just a few short days, you can definitely do it.
There's no question. We would play, you know, a lot of John's friends, you know, John would do, he would have like this rotation of friends that he would have over all summer. He'd be there, you know, 8 weeks, something like that. And people would come over for a week and they would do the same rotation every week. But you would play 36 a day, have dinner at his house, and then play another 7 or 8 holes every night outside of his house. So if you weren't all in on golf, you would not have loved this trip. But if you were, it was like, it was paradise, because, you mentioned it, it's light until like 11, 11:30. Then it gets light at like 4 o'clock in the morning. So you're not even really ever tired for whatever reason over there. You just keep going, and maybe it's the air, the sea air that, you know, you're right on the coast, but it's just an awesome place to be during the summertime.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So you have a full-time job. You play quarterback for a living, if people didn't know that. But you do play in certain events. Do you play in any amateur events? Is that something you've gotten into at all? Play in any local events, 18 holes, any qualifiers, things like that?
I haven't. You know, I've been invited to play in the Dogwood Invitational, which is a big amateur event at Druid Hills here in Atlanta. But the timing of it doesn't work for me at this point with it being during our off season program, but that's something I'd like to do in the future. See how good you can get, you have no chance going against, you know, these kids who are so good, but just to be able to kind of see where you stand and see how your game holds up in those kind of conditions is something that, you know, might interest me in the future.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of been the trendy thing. I mean, something we've seen the last few years with solid professional athletes is they want to sneak in to competitive golf. I mean, we saw Tony Romo obviously do it a lot and still does it. Jerry Rice did it. Steph Curry, Smoltz. There's a long list of these people that have gone out there to give it a go. When you're done with football, do you see yourself possibly playing in a Korn Ferry event or doing something in terms of taking the invitation and trying to see where you can get to?
Yeah, I would start with something smaller than the Korn Ferry.
You don't want to go
like that.
You don't want to go just wrangle with the professionals.
I've played enough with guys who are professionals to know that my game does not stack up with theirs. But
your solid 71's not going to do it. Huh?
you can't fire those 62, 63s that those guys do, you know, without effort. I play at a place in California called Shady Canyon, and there's a pro there, Brendan Steele, who I play with, you know, when I'm in town, and it's amazing. I think last summer before I came back for training camp, he was giving me like 6 or 7 shots, and I played really good and shot like 70 or 71, felt good about my day, made a bunch of birdies, and lost a ton of money to him because he shot 62.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's just another level and another gear that those guys can go to that's so impressive.
I think that's what gets lost so much is if you went out and played with a professional golfer, you'd be very impressed with their game. It's polished and they hit it very straight and they don't make a lot of mistakes, but on any given day, they might go out there and shoot 3 or 4 under and you go, oh, you know, 69, 68, that's a pretty good round. But as you said, the problem is any given day, they might go out and shoot 61, and the gear that they can get to, that sixth and seventh gear, is the difference. And that's why they are who they are and where they're at. And oh, by the way, they're able to do that under the toughest of conditions. You know, that's, they almost can step it up at these big events, you know, when everything counts on the PGA Tour, on the Korn Ferry Tour, on the LPGA Tour. And you see a separation. So when people always ask, what's the difference in a +2 handicap and a professional? And you're like, oh, everything, all of the stuff is different. Literally, literally everything is different.
Well, the crazy part to me too is, you know, you talk about the difference between, you know, a scratch or a +2 or whatever at your local club. And the difference is, you know, those guys are going week to week, completely different golf courses, completely different conditions, you know, whereas guys like us, you know, we're pretty much playing the same 2 or 3 golf courses the majority of the time. And you know the holes inside and out, and where to miss, where you can't miss, what the greens are like, if it's firm, if whatever. You just know your places inside and out. And what, you know, is always so impressive to me is you see guys playing, you know, at Riviera 1 week, then they're in Mexico City the next week, and now they're going to be on Bermuda greens this week. I mean, those courses couldn't be more different, and their game shows up regardless. And just to me, it's so impressive.
So if we started an NFL March Madness tournament for current NFL players, but it was golf, would you be the number 1 overall seed?
Oh, I don't know about that. Are we playing like off your handicap or
what? Yeah, I'm saying, is there somebody out there in the league that you feel like would have a better handicap than you, or that you feel like if you played them, they would beat you if you both played well? I'm giving you a chance to start the smack talk now.
I would take my game. You know, I don't, you know, I've played with a handful of guys. You know, I feel pretty solid about my game and it being able to hold up in that kind of thing. You know, I saw Larry Fitzgerald, last week or 2 weeks ago at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. And, I like him as a partner though, in one of these like member guests or something like that,
where
he's catching those kind of strokes and has the ability to, you know, make pars, make birdies. He's got the game to do it. His consistency isn't there all the time, but you know, he definitely has the game to do. He's a perfect, you know, he's a perfect player for a type of event like that. But I'm definitely going to get him on my like member guest circuit.
If he got traded to the Falcons tomorrow, would your over under win total go down about a game and a half? Because they go, well, these guys are going to be sneaking out on Tuesday afternoon, at least get 18 in.
Listen, I think Larry, he might play the most golf of anybody. I mean, he is full on, you know, golf addict and into it and all about getting better.
He's in New Zealand right now.
I know it. And so what's funny is there's a place, here in Atlanta, a club here in Atlanta where I'm good friends with the pro and I'm not a member there, but, you know, I play over there every once in a while and, you know, I'll roll in and play and they'll be like, oh yeah, Fitz was here like last week. And I'm like texting Fitz, like, are you kidding me? You didn't text me, you're coming in. He's like, oh man, I was with some guys. And, but he's at places, you know, I roll into all the time just saying, oh yeah, Fitz was here last week, which is pretty cool to hear.
Yeah. I live out in Arizona. I've seen him. I've gone to certain clubs that he's a member of. And I will say there's about an 80% chance you're going to see him on the range or the putting green when you show up. And I'll also say this as a golfer, it's great because Larry Fitz is an unbelievable ambassador for our game. And I'm nervous about the Marco Mira, Phil Mickelson records at Pebble Beach. I mean, they've got these unbelievable win totals at that event, but if Fitz, we look at Fitz when he's about 60 and he might have four or five wins as a pro-am partner, as you said, he might be the best partner in the world.
No question. His name's already on there twice on the wall behind number one tee. So, it's an impressive streak he has going on right now. It's funny. You mentioned we played together out in Arizona the week I was there. And so I was shaking hands with Fitz after the game and he was like, yo man, I heard you were out at Desert Mountain the other day. Why didn't you hit me up? And I'm like, oh man, you got your eyes and ears everywhere. So
he's following
the two
you.
Of us are keeping tabs on each other.
Yeah. We played with Matt Schaub, who is your backup. And Matt told us a story. You guys obviously both named Matt, that there was at one point in your career, there were three Matts in the quarterback room. Is that right?
And our quarterback coach. So we had myself, Matt Schaub, Matt Sims was our third quarterback. And our quarterback coach was Matt LaFleur, now the current head coach of the Green Bay Packers. And he probably told it better, but, you know, the running joke was that, you know, there was only one Matt in the room. Everybody else was either Schaubi, Sims, or right. LaFleur. And so, it was a fun time to be in that room.
Yeah. We said, how did people know who they were talking to? And Schaub being, you know, the kind hearted, nice man, he goes, if they were saying Matt, they were talking to Matt Ryan. they were not addressing us. Trust me. That was not the case. You went to school in Boston. Did you play golf at all in college? Were you even a recreational player at the time?
We did. We would play during the summertime. I mean, obviously the season's short up there, but we would play like two nights a week, nine holes, you know, at a place probably about 25 minutes away from BC, a public course where we could get on for like under 10 bucks, walk, and we would play until it got dark. And whoever won on the way home, we would stop for Subway. And whoever won, you know, got their $5 footlong for free. So it was a good time.
Yeah, really underrated golf city. You know, Boston is up there. I know it's a big city, and I know the kind of named golf courses are known around the world, and they've hosted big events. But there are some sneaky private clubs, places that a lot of people might not know about. I always say Boston has to be one of the more underrated places in the country to go play. I mean, Chicago's similar. You know, Chicago has all of these golf courses that you may or may not have heard of that are these gems. But yeah, Boston, you said the season's short. Boston's got some fantastic, fantastic places to play.
Yeah, serious golf and serious golfers. I mean, there's, you know, even though the season is short, you've got people that are diehards up there about playing. And when their clubs open, you know, during springtime, it doesn't matter if it's like 30 degrees, you see these crazy people out there in shorts. You know, only in Boston are you out in shorts and like 30 degrees, but in shorts and they're out there playing you know, it's tough conditions. The course is kind of still thawing out, but they're into it and they love it. And there's some good players up there.
So Tiger Woods wins the Masters last year. He was 43 years old when he won. We continue to see these tennis superstars, you know, Federer and Novak and Nadal, you know, these guys that I'd say 10, 15, 20 years ago, when they got to be 30 and 31, it was kind of, you're done. I mean, that's kind of the end of your career. Tom Brady defined time. We're seeing LeBron James continue to be this dominant player in the NBA. You're going to be 35 this year. You turn 35 in May. Do you see this stuff? Do you watch Tiger at the Masters? Do you follow along with some of these guys that are getting older and think to yourself, I've still got plenty of good seasons left, considering, you know, in 2020, age doesn't seem to be as big a deal as it used to be?
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, you watch, it's in every sport too. Like you mentioned, the longevity of players' careers has just continued to increase. And I think specifically when you talk about football and the quarterback position, I think there's a number of factors that kind of weigh into why guys are able to play longer. I think number one, you know, the way guys train and how they take care of themselves is different than it was, you know, even 15 years ago. When I first got into the league, the training was much different. And the emphasis of what you needed to be successful was different. So I think, you know, that plays an important role. I think the rule changes to protect the quarterback, you know, where you don't get hit as low as guys did back in the day, protects your legs, but you're also, you know, not really able to get hit up high as much. And where guys are targeting you is different. So I think that's, you know, another contributing factor. And, you know, and I think those two things play a huge role in why guys are being successful longer into their careers.
You know, we see flopping in basketball. You see guys that flop and get foul calls. As a quarterback, and I don't want to say have you been taught or coached to do this, but if you get knocked down a couple seconds after the ball, or, you know, a hand comes over and kind of hits you in the helmet and it was in traffic, do you know that if you complain, you got a better chance of getting a flag? Is that something that you have going through your brain along with everything else that's happening on the football field?
Hell yeah. I think anybody who tells you any different is lying, you know?
Well, I just always see it, and I've always thought
it's crazy in that pocket. And so, you know, anytime for me, you know, you can't really tell exactly where you've been hit. I don't know if I can explain it, you know, the right way, but it's hard to know exactly when you're playing and you're worried about all these other things. It's hard to know exactly, you know, did I get hit? Was that my knee or was it my hip or, you know, was that above my shoulders? You can't really tell all the time. And so, anything that's close, I go for it. And I try and make my case. And, sometimes they hear you, sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't, but, you know, you try and get it any way you can.
Yeah. You've been in the league long enough. I can assume you know, certain guys wearing the white hats behind you listen better than others. I bet when you go into games, yeah, you know which guys are going to hear the quarterback.
For sure. I mean, you get to know these guys really well, you know, especially some of the guys that have been doing it for a long time. There has been, you know, a changing of the guard in probably the last two or three years where there's a lot more new referees, guys that are in their first or second year. You know, but I mean, I saw Cleet Blakeman, one of, you know, one of the referees in the league, he met my sister-in-law on a vacation, and I was talking to him about that, you know, prior to one of these games. So the world becomes very small, and you get to know these guys through the years, and they know how you operate, and you, you know, get to know how they operate, and you develop a rapport.
All right. I'm sure this, something like this will pop right into your head. What's the hardest hit you've ever taken? Doesn't have to be in the NFL, just throughout your life. What's the hardest hit you've taken that, that I can only imagine you wish you could erase?
Yeah, there's no question. I was a sophomore in college at BC. We were playing Clemson, and you know, people can YouTube this clip too. It's you pull it up and just type in there, Matt Ryan Clemson hit. And I got hit right in the chest. And my helmet flew off. Oh man, I was like, it was the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. And that was it. That was the hardest hit. And hopefully I never have one quite like that again.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, and this is just bringing up this because I was watching it, but you know, that Aaron Hernandez thing out on Netflix, and they were showing some of the hits he was taking early in his career. And it is so wild when you just go back 5, 6, 7 years, the hits that you guys were taking compared to now, you're still getting smoke. I still get hit really, really hard. But some of those ones from kind of the previous NFL, you know, I mean, getting up from them was impressive. I mean, you know, you're just getting your bell rung over and over again. I bet that there is a part of you that is so thankful that you weren't Troy Aikman, you know, you weren't Bradshaw, that you were playing kind of where football is now. And that's even better for some of these younger guys coming up, because they're never going to even have to deal with some of the stuff that you were dealing with when you started out in the NFL.
Absolutely. You know, I think that, you know, you mentioned just even in the last 4 or 5 years, I mean, I remember earlier in my career, you know, Mondays and Tuesdays after games being way harder and way tougher than they are now. And I think, you know, that's a good thing. And another thing, you know, not to send this podcast in a different direction, but another thing I get asked at all the time is about, you know, would you let your kids play football?
Right.
And you know, that kind of question. And I think the answer is yes, because of a lot of things you said, you know, it's a different game than it was, you know, 5, 10 years ago. And I think that's a good thing. I think, you know, for sustainability of the sport moving forward, I think the rule changes, both in college and in professional have been good, have been positive, and are changing the ways that guys hit and target and, technique and all of those things, you know, along with the improvement of equipment. I think all of those things make it safer, which long-term is better. You know, I don't think, because you don't see as many brutal hits, people aren't into it as much. I think people still love it, you know, and people are still fanatical about this sport. So, I think it's headed in a good direction.
What was the worst heckle job you got at the pro-am from somebody? Did you hear anything that somebody yelled at you? I'm assuming could be about football, but did you get anything
yeah,
you
people
heard?
Are so, yeah, people are so unoriginal. The biggest thing is the 28-3. That they continue to harp on. And so it's like, yeah, I get it. All right, good one. And then you just kind of move on.
Yeah, you know, the I can only imagine that the 28-3 jokes, first of all, not original. Second, they hurt, man. That stuff hurts. Yeah, it still hurts.
Exactly.
What are people thinking?
I'm like, that's personal, man.
Yeah, that was my life. That was my chance to win the Super Bowl. You guys, you know, are slowly getting set to kind of get back into football, which means golf will go down. Do you have any more golf trips planned before you dive 100% back into your job?
I've got a little tutor here, coming up with some friends, to head down to Sea Island, where there's some really good golf down there. And I'm looking forward to that, but, really just praying for the weather to break here in Atlanta, you know,
just too cold.
So I can, yeah, it's just cold right now. It's still kind of, it's been cold and wet and, you know, we need spring to come here soon. And, but you know, that's kind of my big trip on the radar, within the next couple of weeks. And, you know, then it's kind of back to work and getting ready for next season.
Yeah. You know, I have a two of three element rule when I play golf. And it's simply this. There's three elements that that people don't want to play golf in, right? It's wind, it's cold, and it's rain. And as long as two of those three things aren't around, then I'll play. But if two of the three are in, I'm out. I'm not playing in wind and rain. I'm not playing in rain and cold. And I'm not playing in cold and windy. I don't want to go do that. I'll take the day off and I'll get back at it the next day. Like you said, when it's brutal, when it's brutal and all you want to do is get out on the golf course, you're sitting inside, you're thinking, just warm up 10 degrees. You know, that's all I need. I just need 10 degrees here.
100%. I'm sitting in Atlanta right now looking outside and it's sunny and it looks great. And outside it's cold and it's windy. And to me, like you said, cold and windy, that's the worst combination. I'd rather go in the rain. I'd rather go in the wind. But the cold and the wind, I mean, it's just that makes it difficult.
All right. Last question. What's Vegas setting the line at? Steph Curry versus Matt Ryan, 18 holes on TV.
Oh man, I think right now maybe I get him just because he's coming off the broken hand.
you're factoring in injury.
That's my only chance. I think that's my only chance. No, I mean he's so good. I've seen him play when we were really young out in Lake Tahoe, and he's got such a good move at it. He's so consistent. I'd probably say he would get after me pretty good right now.
I still to this day contend that what he did when he shot, what he shoots 71 or 70 in that opening round is one of the most underrated sporting accomplishments in our history. People don't understand. This guy doesn't play golf for a living.
He's an active NBA player. It's not like he's retired too.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
We'll set that number. When you get your first ask and you do that, when you're done playing in the league and you're going to be out there battling on whatever mini tour you're going to do it at, do you feel like you'll, you know, when football ends and that part of your life's done, I mean, do you think you'd get interested in state AMs, you know, those type of events, playing and stuff, just playing a little bit more competitive stuff for your golf?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I'll tell you one thing I really do like, and I'm not like a huge like Vegas gambler. I like to play cards. I like to do those things, but I do like games in golf, and I like that there's a little bit to it, and you know, you got to make it happen at certain times. I do like that feeling of a little bit of skin in the game, like action. And, it's one of the things that, you know, I think you can't recreate outside of what you do professionally. I think it's hard to recreate that. And that's one of the ways that I do. So I don't know if it were to come to that point where McCain was, you know, somewhat respectable, maybe you get into something like that to create that type of feeling inside of you.
So nerve wise, you know, when you're preparing for a football game, I can imagine that the nerves are fluttering around, but football's so fast, you know, you're getting behind center, you're reading the defense, you're preparing for the play. I feel like your mind probably doesn't allow nerves to factor in. You know, that's not the case with golf. Golf, your mind is racing all the time and you're rarely, if ever, actually, you know, using your skills to take the club back and hit the ball or hit a putt. What is the mindset like, and what's the difference in the way, I guess, nerves and pressure is to you, you know, from football to golf?
Yeah, I think it's definitely different. I think the people who are really good at golf make it similar, you know, to where they're just reacting to the situation and whatever the shot requires, it's a feel and it's a reaction to that kind of shot. Well, that's not the case for me with how I play, but that is how it is in football. I mean, you have less time to think. And so it becomes, especially when you're on the field, completely reactionary. You've prepared yourself and you've prepared your body to react to whatever is going on. And you feel good about that. You know, for me, it's like, it's tough to do when I'm playing golf and you get adrenaline going. I played, you know, 17 at Pebble, where you've got people out there. It's a great par three, you know, it's crowded. The wind's coming in right off the grandstands behind the green. And I'm like, all right, man, this is just a smooth 8-iron down there. No problem. But when you've got a little bit of adrenaline, I hit this thing like 15 yards over the green, with an 8-iron that I would never be able to hit it that far. But being able to control that, because you know, to kind of conquer that and to be able to, to rein that back in and to know in certain situations what you have to do. To me, that's where those guys are so different. I mean, just being able to account for all of the things that you have to account for. That's what I've not been able to get to in competitive golf.
Well, Matt, I appreciate the time. We did this about 45 minutes and we didn't mention Joel Klatt one time. Who's up in 2020 in terms of you guys play at the same course in California. I was wondering, are you taking his money or is he taking yours? I get updates from Klatt a lot about his golf game. So I want the truth from you.
So we have only been teammates so far this year. We were teammates versus, it was me and Joel versus Brendan Steele and one of our other buddies, Eric Lauby out there. And we just got pounded. we got flat out pounded by Brendan Steele. And we're 0-for-1 for the year, but I'm sure we'll have some more golf in front of us. I'll tell you what. He, you know, for people that don't know, he is as competitive as they come.
He's a nut.
He's a good golfer. Yeah, he is into it. I mean, he is intense and he loves it, man. He can't play enough.
I'll tell you this and I'll let you go about Joel. And for people out there that don't know, you know, Joel Klatt is an unbelievable analyst for not just college football now, but XFL for Fox. And obviously joined the golf coverage this last year at Pebble Beach and did interviews at all the Opens and was fantastic as that as well. Great golfer, really, really impressive. We played National Golf Links around Media Day for Shinnecock a couple of years ago. And I believe I told you this when we played, but he was playing unreal. And I was kind of, I'm one of those guys, I know where everybody's at score-wise. It's probably a bad thing that I know this, but I always have a pretty good feel of where the guys are at with their playing. And they Klatt knocks the flag down on 17 and knocks in about a 4-footer for birdie. And that got him to 2-under at National. Now, this is a guy that had never shot in the 60s in his life, and 18 at Nationals, a par 5, very reachable if you kind of touch a drive. And he didn't hit his best drive, but he was in play, and he was in the grass, and he'd have a go at it and hit hybrid left of the green. And I'm sitting there, I'm watching this. This guy gets this up and down. He's going to shoot 69 for the first time in his life at one of the best golf courses on planet Earth. And he laid the sod over the first chip, and I have never seen a more disappointed human being on the golf course. The good thing, he got that one up and down. He saved par, makes like a 20-footer to save par. So he has tied his best round ever. He shot 2-under par 70, and he walked off the golf course like somebody had run on and stole his golf clubs. It took like 45 minutes. I'm like, dude, you played unbelievable. You can't be disappointed. That was a great round.
I can only imagine how fuming he was in that particular situation. Having played a bunch of golf with him, I can only imagine.
Matt, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. And by the way, what a professional. Matt went to an office to go on a landline to do this. That is next level professionalism. I don't know if I've ever had somebody do that before. So thank you so much. That is very nice of you, and I appreciate your time.
Anything for you, man. I can't tell you how many times I do a radio show during the football season. I can't tell you how many times they've been so pissed at me for calling in from a cell phone.
So,
with your one shot, I didn't want to do you dirty like that.
No, I appreciate it. We'll do it again when you guys are in the Super Bowl next year and you can't play at Pebble Beach. I will hound you for your 2 weeks of just sitting around. I can only imagine that 2 weeks mentally was never that much fun. So good luck this year. Let's catch up. If you're out here again, we'll tee it up. And people, root for Matt Ryan, one of the great guys in the NFL and a great player that you will at one day in your life see battling on the Corn Ferry Tour.
Thanks, Shane.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Just wanted to give a big thanks, two thumbs up to Matt Ryan for doing that. That was a lengthy one, and I hope you enjoyed it. It was a great one. If you enjoyed it, as I said to start the podcast, just go rate and review it. It's pretty easy to do. It takes you 2 minutes and you never have to do it again. You do it once, you are D-U-N done. I have a little golf trip this weekend. I'm going to go out with a couple of buddies to California. I'll have a report on how that was next week. I'm going to a place I've never been before, Rams Hill, which as I look at my map, literally looks like it's in the middle of nowhere, which tends to be the best golf trips. So that's what I got going on this weekend. I hope you guys get out. Hope the weather's okay where you live. Get out, play some golf, record the score, tap it into the app, And we will be back in the next couple of weeks with a new guest, an exciting guest, always exciting guest. Talk to you guys soon. The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.